I do have Mackendra Silverman on from the Cloud Foundation, and she will be talking about what's coming up this Sunday. Can you hear us, Mackendra?
I can. Thank you for having me.
Oh, very good. Let me just turn up my... Oh, there we go. And, okay, Mackendra, now, where are you, who are you with, and where are you located?
Well, I work, I'm the volunteer associate director of the Cloud Foundation in Colorado Springs, Colorado, so I'm happy to be there in California tonight. But the Cloud Foundation was started in 2005 by Ginger Catherines, who's a filmmaker and a wild horse advocate, in order to protect and preserve our wild horses in the American West, and I think a lot of people aren't even aware that we have wild horses and burros on our public lands that really are the public's wild horses and burros, and they're not being managed well at all.
Hmm.
They're basically being managed to extinction by the Bureau of Land Management, which is charged with their protection and their management.
That doesn't sound a good situation.
No, it's not. It's an incredible waste of taxpayer money, as it's been being conducted now with massive roundups and no real accountability for what's happening to these horses and burros. There's about as many in holding that have been removed from the range as there are left in the wild.
Wow. And now, obviously, horses were native to America, but then they died out and were reintroduced by the Spanish. Is that correct?
Yes. Very good. A lot of people don't know that, but yes, you're right. Horses did develop to completion in North America, and Ginger and I were actually just up in the Yukon in August looking at the remnants of a horse that was discovered in the permafrost by a placer miner.
Oh.
And that horse, they estimated at first that it was probably just a miner's pony that had fallen down a shaft.
Uh-huh.
But it was carbon dated at 26,600 years old.
Uh-huh.
And it actually looks almost exactly like, you know, a shaggy pony you'd see, or a small wild horse in the winter.
Right.
Long hair, flop over mane and tail, kind of light-colored horse. So we know that they were here, and then they died out rather mysteriously, or due to climatic changes,
mm-hmm.
or disease, and possibly hunting by humans, depending on who you ask.
Right.
And they did return with the Spanish around 1500. So they are a return native species, and they returned to an ecosystem that was very much the same as the one they left. So they thrive here in the North American region.
Oh, that's interesting. So it really hasn't been that much of a change environmentally then for them.
Correct.
Oh.
Correct. Yeah. So they're, you know, we're pretty lucky to have them. We don't have the mammoths left,
right,
or saber-toothed tigers. But we do have our wild horses.
Yeah, I think some people are happy that we don't have any saber-toothed tigers.
No, it does make life easier at night. You don't get jumped on by a saber-toothed tiger. So, it's quite a joy. I should maybe back up and explain more about the Cloud Foundation and how that started, because there's a lot of avenues I can take, and we've been battling like crazy as of late, so our brains are probably a little fried.
First of all, you should tell people that just before we even start that on Sunday, a very important event, so let them know first of all.
Absolutely. So on Sunday is the premiere of the third documentary about a pale wild stallion named Cloud, and that is called Cloud Challenge of the Stallion, and it will air on PBS stations nationwide on the Nature program, and it's sponsored by WNET in New York. I think in California, mostly it's at 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening on Sunday, Sunday the 25th. So I hope everyone will watch. I think if you haven't seen the first two Cloud films, it's the documentation of this wild stallion in Montana who filmmaker Ginger Catherines has been filming literally since he walked out of the trees in front of her camera when he was just a few hours old. So this is the only continuing documentation of a wild animal that we know of in our hemisphere.
Hmm.
And Ginger's work has been compared to that of Jane Goodall's, and she's learned an incredible amount about wild horses. And in the first two programs that aired on Nature, takes us through Cloud's eighth year, and this new program on Sunday will pick up where those programs left off in his 9th through 13th years. And he's now 14.
Oh.
And living in the wilds of Montana.
Wow.
With his family. So,
In the wild, how old do horses survive?
Well, you know, there's been, I think, a 26 or 7-year-old horse up in the Priors. Generally, wild horses, I would say, live more, you know, up to 20, but it depends really on the area. In the Priors, you see a lot of horses that are over 20, 21, 22, 24, like that. It's an incredibly interesting environment. The horses go from the low desert all the way up to subalpine meadows around 8,500 feet.
Hmm.
And it's a spectacular wilderness up there in southern Montana, right on the Montana-Wyoming border. And those horses, they live a long time, and they look incredibly healthy.
Hmm. Yeah, I've seen some of the pictures. They look pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, they look a lot better than most people's horses out in the fields.
Right.
Do. They exercise regularly. They eat well, and it's quite a treat and a joy to be able to spend time with them up there. So that's what this new film will allow people to do from their living rooms.
Right.
And it's quite the dramatic story. Ginger's compared it to a soap opera in times past because, you know, this stallion steals this mare, and that mare goes over this stallion, and this foal is born. And if you know the horses, it's really quite quite dramatic. And to see how things pan out in this new show is more exciting than we ever could have imagined. Mm. And just to put things in perspective, I acted as the associate producer for the film.
Oh, yeah.
So we all wear a couple hats. but it is... they're quite a phenomenal wildlife species.
How are they? How do you interact with them? How close do you get to them?
Yeah. You really don't... it is a treat. It's almost like Yellowstone up there in a way, because we don't interact with the horses. We stay 50 to 100 feet away.
Okay.
And they ignore you as if you're an invisible. So it's as if you aren't impacting their behavior at all, as long as you're careful. Then you can sit back and watch their family behavior and watch them mutually groom each other and eat and run and play and steal mares and run off from their families and get brought back. And it's quite, you know, you just sort of sit there and let the drama unfold, or you run around trying to film the right horses, which is more what we did. And in a lot of weather, you know, you have to go up in the winter and drive part way up and then hike in the deep snow a lot and find these horses who are fat and healthy and very furry, digging for grass. And they're able to just eat the snow for water. So
So they can survive the winter without any help then, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do an incredible job. They do much better when we leave them alone, in fact. So,
isn't that the way?
Yeah, and a lot of horse people will, you know, our horses require so much care and shoeing, or at least trimming and worming and vitamins. And these horses, they dig for their own minerals. They know where to go. Their feet are absolutely perfect because they're worn off by the rocks, and they're tough and hardy, and they're quite beautiful, too.
Wow. Oh, incredible. Well, yeah, tell us about the Clown Foundation. How did it get started, and what do you do?
Well, it started in 2005, basically because Ginger's realizing she needed to have a better platform to get the word out to the public that we are losing our horses and burros in the West, in America. And she had been... she is on different boards of different organizations. There's a lot of really wonderful wild horse and burro foundations and organizations to protect them. But the Cloud Foundation really allows her the platform to get the word out and educate people. So that began in 2005, and our focus is certainly on Cloud's herd in the Pryor Mountains of Montana. It's a small herd.
Mm-hmm.
due to a recent roundup, it's now not even genetically viable. There's only 125 horses left in all of Montana.
In all of Montana?
In all of Montana. And I believe there used to be something close to 70,000 wild horses in Montana.
Oh, my goodness.
And now we're down to 125.
I mean, that's a big state. So they can take a few horses.
It's a big size state, yeah. And very few horses. So, and they have about 40,000 acre designated range. But the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, has determined that only 190 to 120 horses can live there. Which we dispute, and the Cloud Foundation part of a big chunk of our funding goes to legal battles. We currently have a court case in the D.C. District Court against the BLM.
They're doing, it's a lot of people take them to court, it seems.
Yes, and maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't. We try to both educate the public and meet with the officials all the way up to senators, and we'd be happy to meet with anyone higher as well regarding this, and then also fight it legally. Just take all the avenues possible to protect these horses.
The new Interior Secretary, Ken Salazar, what's his take on it?
Well, he's actually just recently proposed a plan for America's Wild Horses, which is to create 7 preserves in the East and Midwest. To house about 26,000 wild horses.
Huh.
And it would cost, I think, approximately $96 million for 2 of the preserves. And the bill goes up from there.
Hmm.
And we are thrilled, really, that someone over the BLM, so he's the head of the Department of Interior, which is the BLM is within that department, and so we're happy that the Department of Interior has recognized that there's a huge problem with the Wild Horse and Burro program as it's being run.
Mm-hmm.
But we very much disagree with the idea that it's necessary to spend millions of dollars to ship our wild horses in the West to basically be in sterile, non-reproducing herds or groups out in the East. There's quite a bit of land in the West that has been designated for wild horses, over 20 million acres, that has been taken away from them since 1971.
Right. I think I read somewhere in the literature that in fact, it was designated that there wasn't meant to be a reduction in the amount of range, I thought.
Yes, correct. And so in 1971, the Wild Horse and Burro Act passed Congress unanimously, Congress and both the Senate and the House, which rarely happens. And this was due to Wild Horse Annie, she's called. She really rallied the children of the U.S. to protect our wild horses.
Huh.
And the White House received more letters than any other time except for World War II, I believe, on this issue.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just an amazing effort on behalf of Wild Horse Annie and all these kids. And the story is that she was driving home one day following a livestock trailer. Or I don't know if it's a double-decker or some sort of big semi full of livestock, she thought. But then she saw a trail of blood coming out of the truck and followed it to find all these Mustangs. So she was really instrumental in saving them. Otherwise, I think we'd have no Mustangs in the West.
Wow.
And so she and the kids did it.
Incredible. So, again, grassroots.
Absolutely. And that's really the point we're back at now, because the BLM is following that Wild Horse and Burro Act, which mandates that they be managed with the least feasible management in self-sustaining herds. And given it was approximately 54 million acres that were designated to them, that's where they were found. And now they're down to 29 million acres.
Wow.
And we're down to the Secretary of the Interior proposing shipping horses east, removing more from the range, and then it's not a sustainable practice.
Yeah. It doesn't sound financially or sustainable. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, one of you know, you said that they are obviously culling the herds, and I noticed like this year they're going to cull over 12,000 horses.
Yeah, they're going to round up and remove 12,000 horses and burros this fiscal year, which is October 1 through September 30th of next year, and that's huge number of horses to remove, given especially the state of our economy when very few people can afford to adopt them. What happens is they're rounded up generally almost primarily by helicopter, and they're processed, and horses 11 and older are then put up for sale. So a killer buyer could buy them. You or I could buy them for $25 as long as we signed a few papers saying that we promised we would not sell them to slaughter and we would take care of them. But there's no oversight for those horses. And the horses 10 and under are put up for adoption. And so you go to an auction, or they have internet auctions on the BLM Wild Horse and Burro Adopt a Horse site. And you can adopt a horse for $125 at minimum, and if there's a competitive bid, then it goes up from there. But for a year, that horse is not yours. You don't have title to that horse. And then after a year, the BLM is supposed to check and make sure that that horse is receiving proper care, and then and then you'll be given title to that animal.
So interesting.
It's a it could be a great program if, you know, 3,000 horses were removed in a year, which is about the max that they can adopt lately. But they're actually removing 12,000. So that leaves 9,000 horses that will be probably put into government holding, and that's why the preserves in the east are needed. So that we have, you know, there's about 32,000, 33,000 in holding pens in Oklahoma, Kansas, Nevada, and then short-term holding locations around the U.S. And those can be emptied into the eastern preserves, and then those holding areas refilled with horses from the range. So
it gives me sort of creepy feelings about some things that happened in the past like that. Don't want to say what, but it's pretty creepy.
Yeah, it feels like when you talk to the BLM, some people, you know, it's an agency with a lot of problems. There's a lot of great people who work for the BLM, and there's a lot of people who need to go and retire.
Yeah.
But
you can name names. It's okay.
Soon, it's just you kind of have a bit of the old guard from the Bush administration and prior running the BLM, and it's time for better solutions, better management. What the Cloud Foundation is calling for right now is a moratorium on all roundup, unless they've been deemed, you know, a dire emergency by independent resources saying if something's really wrong.
Right.
But rounding up 12,000 horses at a cost of over $30 million, according to my estimates, it's not fiscally responsible, it's not humane, and it's not necessary.
Right.
And then we'd also like an independent census done of the horses remaining on the range, because really no one knows how many horses are left. So sometimes you add up the BLM's numbers and you get a total thousands off from the total that they're giving the public, which is about 34,000 horses.
Huh. They're trying to minimize it. Yeah, they're not
right. The truth is they don't know. And before we take such drastic action as to remove 12,000, I think it would be very very wise for us to know exactly how many we have left.
Well, right. If there's, because you mentioned something earlier, which was herds being genetically viable. Now, how does that weigh into numbers and of herds and things like that?
Great, that's a great question. When I say genetically viable, I'm referring to about 150 horses, adult horses in a group, and that's based on numbers and reports from Dr. Gus Cothran, who's the foremost equine geneticist in the U.S., and he's at Texas A&M University, and for years he's done genetic studies for the BLM and also independently and for other organizations on what population you need so that you're not losing genetic material from the herd, so you're not getting inbred horses, blue eyes, albinos, you know, different birth defects, etc. So we use that 150 number as a base for genetic viability. And there's a lot of ways to look at it. You need genetic variability in the herd to begin with, and you need a reproducing population of about 50. That's called the genetic effective number. So at 150 is sort of a barely safe number for genetic viability in a herd. And right now what we have is, I think, about 80% of our herds in the West are not genetically viable.
Oh, wow. That's
so
huge.
Yeah. Yeah, we absolutely have a huge problem because what oftentimes happens is the BLM removes a herd down to 60 or 35 horses, as they recently did in Idaho in two herd areas. And then later they say, oh, no, they're not genetically viable. It's time to remove them all. And then they zero out the herd.
Right, right.
When the act passed, there were over 300 herds in 1971 identified to be protected and to be managed. Now we're down to, I think, just over 200. So there's been over 100 herds zeroed out. As recently as this month, they zeroed out 12 herds in Nevada. It's almost, it's rather like the final solution. They're trying, it would appear that they're trying to manage these horses to extinction. And new ideas are creating gelding herds. So you just have a bunch of geldings, which, it's not a bad life to be a gelding out in the wild, but it's not the family structure of wild horses. There's no, the wild is gone.
Right.
I think we really value that in the West.
Absolutely. And now you mentioned, you know, burros and horses. Do they mix or are they two separate herds as they're running around?
No, they're very separate. And I personally don't know that much about burros. They're more independent. They're really being hit hard. If you think wild horses are being poorly managed, the burros are getting it even worse.
Oh,
and there's very few left. But and I just have to excuse myself because I'm not an expert on burros at all. So hopefully an expert will call in soon. But they are mostly descended a lot of times from the gold miners used.
Oh, okay.
And they're neat little guys, and they're out there, and they're tough. But they don't generally mix with the horses, to my knowledge, at all. And they're generally in different herd areas. So you'll have, like, the Mojave Desert burros that I'm not sure if they've finished removing them all, but they are wiping out that herd.
Wow.
They're not an area with wild horses. So a different different group, but equally valuable.
And still, having the same situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not as cute, not as beautiful looking, perhaps.
They're not as beautiful, maybe, but they're pretty darn cute.
Yeah.
I'll have to say. And they're tough, and they, wild horses and burros live in some areas where you would think, they couldn't survive, basically.
Wow.
And yet, out of the sagebrush and the scrub, you find these beautiful animals that are really thriving in their environment when they're allowed to have access to water and be, in some sense, free roaming. And they've been so fenced, further fenced in. and they're, most of the herd areas have cattle or sheep grazing on them.
Oh, right.
So there's a lot of competing interests.
Which is a whole other thing. Unfortunately, I am running up against, I've got another interview coming coming in about 3 minutes.
That's great.
So unfortunately,
I'm taking a chance to grab a bite of dinner, and then I'm happy to come back on. Or
yeah, absolutely. I should be about 20, 25 minutes. So any time after 8, most probably, would be great.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Ronald.
Yeah, we're this Mackendra Silverman from the Cloud Foundation. Perhaps tell them when the show, the documentary is going to be on Sunday again.
Yeah, so this Sunday night, October 25th, on PBS stations nationwide, around 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening, you can tune in to your public television station and watch Cloud Challenge of the Stallions, which is a documentary about a wild stallion in Montana. And I think you'll find the story really intriguing and the species really beautiful to watch. So I hope everybody can tune in.
Yeah, and what is your website?
Our website is www.thecloudfoundation.org.
Great.
And you can find out more, too, by Googling Cloud and PBS.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you very much, Mackendra. Hopefully we'll speak to you a bit later. And, yeah, we'll go from there.
Wonderful. Thank you. So appreciate the time.
Thanks, Mackendra.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, hi, yes, Arnoldo back, and just want to let you know we have Alice Gardner on the phone, and hi, Alice, can you hear me?
I can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Where are you?
I'm trying, here we go, I'm in Marin County, California.
Oh,
I'm a native Californian.
Oh, so you're just in the next county to us, we're in Occidental.
I am, and yes, and I'm hoping that Craig Downer will also call in, a wildlife ecologist, since we're on the air. But yes, I was, I'm right one county over, but I went to the Pryor Mountains to try to stop the Roundup in the, to try to help with the Clouds Roundup.
Yes.
And I ended up being the humane observer there. And I just want to talk about, you know, what's happening to our wild horses. Roundups are grueling affairs. The horses are frightened into trying to flee from this thing that's chasing them. They're all about family. They're all about freedom.
Hmm.
I work on a ranch. I work with horses, and they're incredibly gentle animals. They're prey animals, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between a prey animal and a predator, because humans and dogs are predators. And if you're walking a dog and you hear rustling in the bushes, the dog wants to go see what that is. If you're walking with a horse and you hear rustling in the bushes, hold on to your hat. That horse is going to run the other way because it thinks something wants to eat it.
Right.
So, and they call out to each other. They bond with other family members. Even if they don't like another horse, they would rather be with that other horse than be alone. And what the Roundups do is destroy family groups. And the saddest, aside from their fear and the way they were handled by the people who were processing them, and that's a whole other story, but the saddest thing is listening to them call out to each other. They're quiet. Horses don't vocalize that much. They'll greet each other. Stallions have a ritual sort of smelling nostrils together and sort of a scream that they do. It's a ritual behavior, but generally horses are quiet. And when they're in those holding pens, they're calling out to each other. Like, where are you? I can't see you. I'm over here. It's just heartbreaking. Their whole families are being destroyed. And I just got an email today that in in Green River in Wyoming, they are going to take a herd they're going to capture about 280 horses, and they're only going to return 70 horses, mature horses, to the range. This is an 83,000-acre herd management area.
Wow.
And if I may, if I can find it, I brought it in here. I would really like for your listeners to hear what Congress's intention was back in 1971 when the Wild Free-Roaming Horse and Burro Act was passed. Congress, this is what it says. It says, Congress finds and declares that wild free-roaming horses and burros are living symbols of the historic and pioneer spirit of the West, that they contribute to the diversity of life forms within the nation and enrich the lives of the American people, and that these horses and burros are fast disappearing from the American scene. It is the policy of Congress that wild free-roaming horses and burros shall be protected from capture, branding, harassment, or death. To accomplish this, they are to be considered in the area where presently found as an integral part of the natural system of the public lands.
Hmm.
And back, I'm almost finished. Back then, they defined range as the amount of land necessary to sustain an existing herd or herds of wild free-roaming horses and burros, which does not exceed their known territorial limits and which is devoted principally but not necessarily exclusively to their welfare in keeping with the multiple use management concept for the public lands.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Bureau of Land Management is doing is there are virtually no areas that are principally but not exclusively devoted to the wild horses.
Oh, I see.
Okay, this law is being broken, and the reason we need a new law is to protect our Mustangs from the Bureau of Land Management. Because from what I saw, I see government, this is a radical statement, but honestly, I was showing the videos I took at the prior mountain roundup.
Yeah.
They consider this just, they're used to handling horses in this way, so... Yeah, sort of like keeping a dog chained, you know, people that got used to keeping dogs chained like 8 hours a day, they thought it was normal, they thought it was okay.
Right.
You know, we get immune to the fact of the kind of abuse that we're doing, but I showed the videos to the man sitting on the plane next to me when I was returning to California,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you know, people are talking about Michael Vick and how bad he was, and he
right.
was bad. He said, but this here is government-subsidized animal abuse.
Right.
And we really can make a difference by calling our senators, writing and saying we want to keep our American horses because truly we can't assume that we're going to have them around. I feel such, you can probably hear the sense of urgency that I feel
yeah.
because as we speak, they are driving these gentle, peace-loving, just leave me graze with my family animals. And hopefully you'll hear some more about the science of how they're actually good for the environment. They reduce the risk of fire, wildfires, because they thrive on the dry brush and grasses. They wipe out horse populations, wild horse populations, and we get wildfires.
Interesting, yeah.
When horses eat seeds and various things, the way their digestive system works is it will pass through and have its own fertilizer, but the seed will remain intact because of the way they don't fully digest in the same way the bovines do, the cows do, which they will eat seeds, and they're no longer seeds when they come out. And there's many differences where the horses are actually beneficial in the ecosystem, and this whole thing that they refer to the horses as the problem of the wild horses, that is an erroneous presupposition to begin with. The horses are not a problem. The BLM is a problem.
Right.
And the amount of cows, I'm not saying get rid of cows, but we need to go back to the spirit and intent of this law, and we wouldn't have to pass a new law if they would simply abide by the spirit and intent of the law that was written in 1971.
Yeah, it sounded pretty clear.
Yes.
That law. And yeah, like what you were saying is that That one herd, you said they were going to reduce to like 70, and I was speaking to McKendra before, and, you know, you need more than 150 to actually maintain the viability, genetic viability.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, and I was just talking earlier with, you know, Craig Downer, who's a, you know, wildlife ecologist. Expert, and the World Conservation Union has a species survival commission, and they recommend each herd should be to be minimally viable. They recommend that each herd contain at least 500, and to be optimally viable for long-term survival over the generations, each herd should be well over 1,000 interbreeding and individual animals.
Wow.
This is the Species Survival Commission on the Equid Specialist Group. So Gus Cothran's figures of 150 to 200 are truly minimal.
Exactly. Literally beyond the bottom. Yeah.
Truly.
Huh. Interesting. That's, yeah, what a sad way of looking about it, looking at the situation, that they're a problem rather than an asset.
Correct. And the unfortunate thing is it's a myth. You know, that's what makes it so frustrating is talking about them as if they are, in fact, a problem. We have fewer wild horses now than we've ever had. I think the numbers may have got down to like 70, you know, it's 25,000 or so in around 1971, and others would have more information on that than I. But the ranges are doing fine. You know, we're not the prior mountain horses were healthy and beautiful, and the ranges were fine, and they were saying, well, and they act as though they're doing the horses a favor. You know, Secretary Salazar sounds as though the horses are going to be starving and we're doing them a big favor by rounding them up and moving them. And he comes out looking like a savior.
Wow.
And it's a myth. That's, you know, so we are, and there are Congress people that know that. And, you know, we're hoping to turn things around. And if people will watch and see for themselves this Sunday, this incredible series where you get to see these horses and their families and the way they interact. It's just really exciting. It's great stuff for children and grandchildren to educate them and talk about afterwards. Truly hope people will watch this. It's just breathtaking.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I saw the previous ones. Just beautifully filmed, yes. And now you yourself, you're there as a witness.
I was, yes.
What was that like?
Well, it was heartbreaking, and it was a huge privilege because I was the only one. The Bureau of Land Management said, "Well, we have humane observers," and they named people that had been working with them in identifying the horses up there. They named a couple of people that were visiting from the Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board. But these are all people that had pre-existing relationships with the BLM and have a relationship and a potential conflict of interest. It would be uncomfortable for them to take videos as I did and then post them on the internet of things that were that they're doing, you know, that may not look, that aren't very nice, you know, like using an electric cattle prod on a terrified horse. There was, Ken McNabb is a fine, he's a horse trainer, he's got a show, and he was there, and they could easily have asked his suggestions about how to handle the horses, but it wouldn't occur to them because they have their way of basically scaring the horses into these narrow chutes, and you know, they were trying to be nice. They weren't trying to be abusive.
Right.
But there's a lack of understanding based on experts who have more experience than I, who've seen the films and reviewed them, said to me, you know, these people really could use some understanding in horse handling. It would save them some trouble, and it would save the horses a lot of grief.
Right.
So I was back to your question, I was the only one that didn't have a relationship to defense, so I could take the videos, and I and it was hard because after the media left, they didn't want to let me see up close. I had taken videos, and they can be seen. They're actually on the Humane Observer blog on the Cloud Foundation's website. You can go to thecloudfoundation.org and click on blogs, and then it says Humane Observer, and they were kind enough. I haven't had time to put together my own blog, so the Cloud Foundation was kind enough to keep people updated on and put my results there. And I believe very strongly that all of the roundups should have humane observers. The public needs to have we have a right to know how these people who are our servants, our government representatives, they are charged to take care and protect these animals, and we have a right to know how they're handling them. And so there need to be humane observers where the horses come into the pen to see how are they sweating, how those horses ran over 12 miles down a mountain. I was not allowed to see them close up. I'd get a report over the walkie-talkie to my escort saying, the vet says they're fine. And I said, with all due respect, I am here. The wild horse advocates have asked me to be their eyes and ears, and I'm asking, respectfully requesting that you please let me see the horses. Mm-hmm. Let me take pictures. I need to document their respiration rate and their heart rate. No, it's too dangerous. And it wasn't. So it was really frustrating dealing with the bureaucracy and being stiff-armed in that way.
Right.
I did get enough access initially to get, you know, good information, and they're talking about being willing to have humane observers, but we need a humane observer in the chute area where people are processing the horses. They take DNA samples by pulling hair out of the tail and mane, getting the hair root, so they get DNA from the hair root, and they take about 20 to 30 hairs at a time. They give a tug, and you know, so the horses are, you know, penned up in a narrow chute so they don't hurt themselves trying to escape. And they, whatever they need to do, they do in that chute area. Well, you know, the horses aren't happy about going into that area, and sometimes it's just good to have a camera rolling there. It's good to have a pair of eyes there. My eyes, they knew, were dedicated to the horses. I was there on behalf of the horses, and it made me, as much as it was painful, it made me feel very happy to know that the horses had somebody. And it hurts my heart to think of these thousands of horses being rounded up, and the only people there are the wranglers. And there have been some disasters where they run these horses into the pen at full speed and right into a trailer. And if you go to Wild Hoofbeats, Carol Walker's website, you can find the Sandwash herd roundup pictures. Just disasters happen where horses get crushed. They're so afraid. They did it slowly in the Pryor Mountains because there was so much attention.
Yeah.
They were very careful not to do that. But when there's no one around, what is happening to these terrified creatures?
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? It's being the witness and the eye. It changes behavior.
It does. And so if they're going to keep these roundups going, we need to be telling Congress we want humane observers there with cameras going. Because I can't stop them. It's not my job to say, oh, you can't do that. But I'm just there as a silent witness.
Right. And is there any Congress people or senators who are helping, at least lip service?
Yes, there are. Congressman Raul Grijalva, who introduced, and Nick Rahal, who introduced the Rome Act. Senator Mary Landrieu, very much pro-wild horse. I know Senator Barbara Boxer is wanting to support the Rome Act, but we need to tell our California senators they have the power. They just zeroed out the wild burros. Those poor little guys, they don't even get the glory that the horses get, you know, and they zeroed out 350 wild burros from Southern California, right in the area, by the way, where the BLM is also in charge of the areas that are slated for renewable energy. They're very excited about solar and various renewable energy, but it's interesting when you look at the maps, they overlay a lot with the horse herd management areas. So again, the horses are struggling to survive, to keep the few. Let me just give you some more figures. 157 million acres, according to BLM spokesman Tom Gorey, 157 million acres of grazing land is dedicated to cattle grazing. We're down to 20.9. McKendra rounded up to the 29 million acres for wild horses, and cattle occupy most of those as well.
Yeah.
And we've got, what, at the most 36,000 horses roaming wild, and between 3 and 8 million cattle.
Something wrong with that picture.
These are the facts. These are the facts.
Wow. Well, there's a lot to do. Hopefully the documentary is going to really rouse people up and, you know, get the support going again and pressure the politicians.
I certainly hope so, because these amazing animals need us. They really need us, because if we don't speak up, we won't have them anymore.
Right. They'll be gone. Yeah.
They will be gone.
Yeah, just like they were before. they died out originally, 15,000 years ago or something. So it will be causing it this time.
Yep.
Well, I should move on, Alice. I think McKendra is going to give a call, so I should...
Yes, well, thank you. I did not mean to take her time here.
No problem. I like to be nice and flexible, so you said some great stuff, so I really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this show. Bless you. The horses, thank you. I thank you on their behalf.
Oh.
All right.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much, Alice.
Thank you. It's Elise. Uh-huh.
Oh,
bye-bye.
Sorry, Elise. Sorry.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Elise Gardner, and we'll be just playing another little tune, and then we'll be getting right back. This is Arnoldi, your host of Tommy's Holiday Camp. All right, that was Billy Davis. He's the one, and we do have some more on the wild horses situation, and we have Shelley Sahook, is that right, on the phone?
That's correct.
Well, hi, Shelley, and now who are you with?
The American Horse Defense Fund.
Okay, and what is your purpose on the defense fund?
What we do is we lobby for humane laws for the treatment of equine, and one of our biggest issues right now are the wild horses and burros.
Okay, and now you said that you've just come back from D.C.?
This morning.
Oh, wow, just literally flown in. And where are you now?
Well, I'm at home. I live in Tennessee, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm not from California, but McKendra told me that you were doing the special, and Ginger Catherine actually sits on our board. So
oh, okay.
She thought that folks might be interested in knowing what's going on with, in particular, their senators, who I visited with both of them while I was in D.C.
Both the Californian?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. And what was their reaction?
Mostly what we were there to do was to promote a resolution that our organization, along with a lot of others, put out, calling for a moratorium on all gathers.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want them to do is to stop gathering horses until they know exactly how many are on the range. Because there seems to be a lot of questions about how many animals are actually on the range.
Oh, dear, they don't even know that yet.
They don't.
Huh.
The GAO released a study in 2008 saying that they don't know how to count the horses.
I tell you, our state of education is going down.
This is true. And if you don't know how many there are, how can you decide what you should be doing with them?
Right.
And so we're asking for a moratorium on all gathers and an independent census. We don't want the Bureau of Land Management to try and count them again because they can't.
Right.
And I had some very, very good conversations. However, Secretary Salazar just released a plan, and the senators were mostly interested in how we perceive the plan and what we think, you know, and the administration is pushing for the plan to go forward, which we're very, very much opposed to.
Hmm.
Because that basically moves all the horses from the western rangelands into what they call sanctuaries in the east,
right.
And all the horses would be sterilized. There would be no reproduction. They'd only keep a few of the showcase herds intact, and they would only allow very, very, very limited breeding among them.
Wow. That's sort of really squeezing them out of existence, isn't it?
It is exactly. We have been saying for years that they've been managing for their extinction, and they're really pushing for it now.
Wow.
I just saw that a reporter from Las Vegas got an email from the Bureau of Land Management from an ecologist there who said that the wild horses and burros do not belong on western lands and that the 1971 law was a mistake.
Oh, dear.
Yes, and these are the people that are put in charge of, you know, enforcing that law.
Right. Yeah. Was this something from the Bush administration that got carried over, or is this really something from the Obama administration?
In all honesty, this has gone on under Republicans and Democrats. It's a politician problem, unfortunately.
And I suppose that goes in with all the various interests of the land, people who want to use the land or have access to it.
Right. There is a program that they're pushing right now, and it's called the Ruby Hills Pipeline that they're wanting to put through on... it goes through a corner of California, but mostly it runs in Nevada, where the majority of the horses are.
Hmm.
And it's on a fast track to be approved, and within that proposal it says that they will remove all wild horses that stand in the way of the that project.
Hmm. Wow. Isn't that strange? Yeah, just to have again, it's just like we complain about the rainforest. We just go in there and bring it all down. So it's really the same thing in the West, just it happens to be horses.
Right. Well, it and this does impact a lot of other things because, you know, once they say they're just taking the horses, well, it's not just that. Outside of Las Vegas, they took the horses. Now the grasses have grown so high that it poses a fire threat.
Mm.
So you have it becomes a domino effect, just like the rainforest. You know, we were part and party of destroying the rainforest, and then we find out that there's all these repercussions of the rainforest.
Right.
So, you know, in the same way, when you start monkeying around with nature's balance, you have a domino effect on how it impacts
right.
other issues.
Exactly. So you know, you go to D.C. and see the politicians as you're going around. I mean, are they that, you know, separate distance, disconnected from it? Do they get it? Or is it just because there's other people with big money waving at them that they get distracted? What do you feel?
In some cases, I do truly believe that they care. And Senator Boxer's office, in particular, we brought an issue about the Southern California burros that were just removed.
Mm.
And her aide seemed very distraught over that and was... we took them some specific letters from California residents, and he promised to immediately get those in front of the senator to try and put some of those burros into a Southern California rescue so that they're not forever gone from California. So we get some of that, you know, where they truly care, and yet when we leave, when the money shows up, I think they kind of go off and forget kind of what they were doing.
Right.
It's like, you know, waving a shiny bauble in front of some, you know, a baby. They kind of, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing. It costs a lot of money to be in their faces the whole time in Washington.
Unfortunately, it does. Our organization can't afford it. So basically, our members and myself fund our trips to D.C. personally, which makes it very limited in what we can do. This particular time, I was there for a week, which is great because you can get into more offices. You can get into more details.
Right.
In particular, they asked, you know, for a point paper on what questions they should ask the BLM, which was very encouraging.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, just even getting to that point of wanting to ask a question.
Yes. Yes. So, we had some very encouraging. I was very, very encouraged in Senator Boxer's office. Senator Feinstein's office, they seemed to be a little distracted and just wanted to know our position on, you know, the Salazar plan, and didn't seem to care so much about how we got to the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah, they're just living in the moment.
Right. And a sanctuary plan has been attempted previously, and it cost the taxpayers, you know, over $1 million a year, and that was for 1,000 horses.
Wow. Yeah.
So
yeah, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars to manage all these, what they plan to do, you know.
Right, and it's much less expensive to manage them on the range and leave them and not gather them so much. You know, it's better for the horses. It's better for the personnel because the personnel, you know, there's a chance of injuries. There's often injuries, not only to the animals, but also to the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recent gather where there were 11 deaths of horses on during a gather. And, you know, an injury, you know, and those can be slight injuries, but even if they're slight injuries, you know, you don't want to go home with a broken arm or, you know.
Right.
They refer to those as slight injuries.
Oh,
but,
dear.
That's... to me, is not, you know, this is a person. We don't want to see them harmed either.
Right, exactly.
So if we gather fewer animals and leave them on the land, we save money, we save people, we save horses.
Yeah, it sounds a pretty good deal to me.
That's what it sounds like to me as well.
Yeah. You got me convinced. So, yeah, we need to then really, we need an email campaign to our senators, obviously, and Congress people to make sure that they realize that, I suppose.
Right. And we've started a new website that has our resolution on it, and it has a lot of really good information on there called www.saveourwildhorses.com.
Great.
And there's a lot of great information and sample letters of what people can send to Congress and ways to contact Congress through the website, as well as, you know, a lot of information on the Bureau of Land Management and court documents going back to the 80s. We're trying to get before
wow.
that, but, you know, it's a little hard to gather.
Yeah.
All that information, but we have over 100,000 documents on the website. So
oh, my goodness. That's
so
great.
Anything anybody could need is on there.
Yeah, that's great work. Fantastic. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Shelley, for calling in and letting us know about what you've been up to and the political side of this.
Well, I appreciate the time, and I appreciate you doing this story because it's really important to get this out to the public.
Yes, indeed. It's just, a tip of the iceberg for all the other species, the stress on all the other species we have.
This is true.
So if we can't save them, what can we save?
I said that in a blog post not too long ago. If we can't save the Pryor Mountain horses, how can we save the rest that don't have a name?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Shelley Salhook, and thank you very much calling from Tennessee.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Yeah, they're just playing some more of the old British stuff from the early 60s. And I do have a caller from Wisconsin. Morgan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for calling in to Cows out here on the West Coast.
Well, thank you very much for your show. It has been a terrific show so far, and everything that you've discussed and you've told the public about has been great.
Okay, what is your interest in horses?
I'm just a very concerned citizen. I have been since I was a child. I fell in love with Wild Horse Annie when I was a child and have followed Mustangs since then and have recently picked up the momentum with the Roam Act and was fortunate enough to be in Washington with Mustangs on the Hill and be a part of that. And I want to say just a kind word about my senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold.
Oh, yes.
He very generously made time to see me that day in Washington and give me his very sincere ear to listen to the issue, he and his staff, and take in all of the information and give it a great deal of thought. And I was sent back a personal letter from Senator Feingold about how he felt about the issue and what he was going to be doing in the future to help see Rome get passed, and also S-727, the prevention of cruelty to equine, to lend his voice to getting that passed. And I think that there are good people in Washington who care about what's going on with the people because they serve the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just fortunate to live in Wisconsin where I have a senator like that.
Yes, he's seems a fine politician, yeah.
Yes, he is, and he has been for a very long time, so I'm grateful. And one thing that since I started investigating and listening to all of these fine professionals like the Cow Foundation and Wild Hoof Beats and other people, the one thing I watched recently was George Knapp's report out of Las Vegas, the I-Team investigation called Stampede to Oblivion. Huh. And I encourage every single person listening to go online and watch that report. You're going to get a lot of your questions answered about why is this happening. Because when you see such insanity going on, there has to be a reason. Somebody's got to be making something from it, a profit.
Right.
Somebody's pockets have got to be getting filled. Somebody's hands are getting greased. Somebody's back is getting scratched.
Right.
You know, for whatever reason. And I just encourage everybody out there, please research why this is being done, and you'll be so surprised. Because when I approached my senator, I said, this is not about a bunch of bleeding heart people caring about a bunch of horses that nobody cares about. It's more, it's deeper than that. It's the horses are the, I'm not making light of our Mustangs and Burros, but they're the top layer of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
They're just being cleared out of the way for the deeper issues. And the American people are going to be shocked out of their boots when they realize why they're doing what they're doing, what our federal government is doing to the Mustangs and the Burros, why they're kicking them around like so much garbage.
Right.
They have that they have no value. It's more than us just being passionate about horses. We're passionate about our public land, our national parks, our wildlife. You know, Ken Salazar not only is an anti-Mustang and anti-Burro, he's anti-wolf. He just opened season wolf in Idaho and Montana. They're wiping out entire packs of wolves.
And after they also came back from the endangered species as well, isn't it?
Ken Salazar took them off the endangered species list last month so that the season could be opened, so that they could be shot and killed. Entire packs are being killed. pups are being left to die. So when you get past the surface, and it's a big surface, to the underlying issues, it affects every single American. It's taxpayer dollars. It's our natural resources. It's overseas countries buying up more of our country that they shouldn't have. So it affects every American. So I encourage everyone to go watch Stampede to Oblivion along with Follow the Stallion this Sunday and educate yourself before it's too late.
Right. Now, the I-Team thing from Nevada, do you have that email address where people can get go see that?
It's George Knapp, and it's with KLAS, Channel 8, in Las Vegas, Nevada. And it was an I-Team investigative report that was aired on October the 10th, 2009, so just 3 weeks ago. And the fact, and George Knapp is a Peabody winner. This is a man who knows his stuff. He's been following the Mustangs for 18 years. He's been fighting for them. He really gives you the facts on why this is happening, why we need to stop the slaughter of not only, people don't realize that it's not just slaughter of Mustangs and burros, it's slaughter of domestic horses, border horses, thoroughbreds, Arabians.
So it's way more standing behind those the wild horses than
it's just so much more, and thank the Lord we've got someone, we've got Ginger Catherine making a public spectacle so that people will get an interest, and she's not only affected Americans, she's affected Europe with please pay attention to what's happening here, because a species is going to get wiped out.
Right,
and then they're going to go deeper, and they're going to start taking away the things that they were really after.
Right, so
it's the nuisance.
Exactly, it's that bit. Yeah, it's one piece of that big picture, which will all fall into place if they manage it. Yeah.
Yeah, and someone had. And this is a free country, and I'm very grateful for that. We get to speak our minds, and someone gave me a way to describe the BLM, bloody lies and mismanagement.
I've heard a lot of that on that similar lines, I must admit.
Mismanagement to the nth degree.
And so many different, not just horse people, people who, just people who, backpackers or whatever. Everyone is just very unhappy with BLM,
You bet they are.
Yeah. Well, I better go, Morgan. I'm running out of time on my show. I really appreciate you calling in from Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you so much. And don't forget, we're the Dairy State, too.
Oh, that's right. We are Cow. This is Cows Radio, so you have an affinity for us.
Yes, we're the Dairy State, too. Don't forget about us out here.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Morgan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Morgan calling from Wisconsin. Let's have some more music. This is Arnaldo on Cows Radio, 107.3 FM, 874-1073, area code 707, in the studio. Okay, we have one more guest on the show, and that is Craig Downer. Can you hear me, Craig?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Oh, great. Now, Craig, you are a...
A wildlife ecologist. I graduated from Berkeley there, Cal Berkeley.
Oh, good. So you're local to...
I live up here. I'm a native Nevadan, fourth-generation Nevadan. Friend of Wild Horse Annie, and worked with her to save the wild horses. And I'm just very outraged at what's happening to them now. It seems like the enemies are in charge, and they're being very two-faced and hypocritical. But they're proceeding with an agenda to basically subvert the Wild Free Roaming Horse and Burro Act and deprive these wonderful animals of their rightful place and freedom on the public lands, on a relatively minor portion of the public lands. Right. I'm very upset because they restore the ecosystem here, the equid element that has its cradle of evolution here and long-standing evolution here in North America, and they contribute so much in a positive way, both ecologically and aesthetically, but they're being targeted by a bunch of mean-spirited people that concoct a lot of negative propaganda about them and then proceed to pretty much get rid of them.
Yeah. Just for the
And that's what's happening now.
Now, somebody asked me just a few minutes ago, who called in, I think you may be able to answer this question. What are the range conditions where they're living, and how do they look when they're, how do the horses look when they're being, you know, when they're being rounded up? Are they, you know, really thin, emaciated? What are their conditions?
No, most of them are in real good shape. But just as with any population, some of them, you know, are in decline, or if they've come out of the winter, they're a bit thin. But by far, most of them are in excellent condition. And the range for them, well, the range in a lot of areas is not doing well, but it's not because of the wild horses. It's because of the enormous pressures put on by humanity in the form of livestock. Now the horse does a lot to reverse that situation by contributing to the humus content through its droppings, and also by seeding a lot of native plants. And unlike the Hereford livestock or cattle, which are mostly, and there's also sheep, of course, but most of the cows are from that descent. They come they're moisture loving, and so they tend to just camp out on the stream sides and the lake sides and make a real mess. And that's where most of your wildlife in the Great Basin here depends for its long-term survival.
Oh, I see. So really, yeah, so they're a real detriment, the what they are running there.
Yeah, the horses spread out their pressure over vast areas. They don't camp. They're more arid, semi-arid, adapted animal. And, well, the burro even more so. And they're capable of wandering much further before they come back to water, whereas time and time again your livestock will be just camped out and just ruining the riparian habitats. But now the dishonest tactic that's being employed is that our public land managers will always lump the livestock with the wild horses or burros, and then proceed to lay the blame on them, in effect, and get rid of them before they'll ever consider reducing any of the livestock.
Right.
And they have a lot of very misleading statements they make, like, oh, there were so many livestock at the turn of the century, and now there's much less. Well, gee, you know, back in the 19th century, they just mined the resources with, there was utterly no control, so that isn't saying much.
Right, the relativeness of that, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a shame how the Wild Horse and Burro Act has been subverted, and how many misled people, including otherwise well-meaning conservationists, have bought into these lies about the wild horses, which are in fact a returned native species here on the continent.
Oh, so there has been quite a split then in the community about some really saying.
Yeah, I think they're just like a lot of politicians. They don't share the love of the wild horses and their freedom, and so they see them as a convenient pawn. And you know, and the rich ranchers are very politically powerful, so they just say, "Oh yeah, well, we'll give you some wilderness, and but you know, be sure you don't stand up for the wild horse because we hate them and want to get rid of them." So I think it's a deplorable attitude.
Yeah.
When you think of all the horses done for mankind. All he suffered and died and helped him advance to be treated this way and not afforded a place under the sun, a place of freedom here in the cradle of their evolution, I think is a shame and disgrace to America.
That's a very, very well put point, I think. And I think I am literally at the end of my show, so we're going to have to leave it on that, Craig.
I'm sure appreciate this opportunity to speak out. And if people will go on the KLAS Now website, there's just a hard-hitting expose, and also the one that was done the former week called Stampede to Oblivion by George Knapp. Will fill them in a lot. And if they also want to look up the speech I gave a year ago on Columbus Day in Las Vegas, you just Google my name, Craig Downer, and Forever Wild and Free, and I give a lot of information on this.
Oh, excellent. I really appreciate it. We've had some great people call in and really given a really fabulous overview of what's going on and what people need to do to help.
Yeah, it's still on the books. We just got a... got to turn things around, and it can be done.
Yeah. Say, everyone, look at the documentary this weekend on Sunday, and perhaps we can get the tide turned.
Yeah, the cloud. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, well, thanks a million, Mr. Levine.
Thank you, Craig.
Okay,
appreciate you calling in. Good night.
Good night.
Easy to do.